Next one is number 12, Columbia River Emerging Purse Seine and Beach Seine Fishery. This is a briefing and a public hearing. The team remains, the front table. Guy and Ron.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to hand this one to Ron immediately.
Okay.
he's going to put me on the spot again. We're working on getting me past some of my nervousness in public speaking, and the only people I'm nervous around anymore is you guys.
I thought you were going to say Guy.
No, not Guy. Anyway.
Just think of us all with no clothes on.
No, don't do that.
I've done it. Okay. Madam Chair, members of the Commission, surprisingly enough, my name is Ron Roller, and I'm here to talk to you about the emerging seine fisheries in the Columbia River. That's Columbia River Policy C-3620. A little background. September 2012, a work group was formed to develop an alternative methods for fishing in the Columbia River. It produced a document titled Management Strategies for Columbia River Recreational and Commercial Fisheries 2013 and Beyond. And it also included recommendations for future fisheries. Policy C-3620 was adopted in January 2013. Work group recommendations used as the guidelines to develop the policy, and it includes transition from 2013 through 16 and long-term time frames. The transition time allows for alternative commercial gear types to be developed and implemented. The new gear types will be initially be considered experimental and would be part of an emerging fishery with permits issued by the director. Washington legislature requires an emerging fishery advisory board to be appointed as part of the RCW listed there. The director may issue experimental fishing permits for commercial harvest and emerging commercial fishery if it is determined there is a need to limit the number of participants. The director did so. The part of that policy is the director shall appoint a five-person advisory board representative of the affected industry. That the advisory board was developed, and the panel met to make recommendations to for the criteria to figure out who is going to be able to participate in this limited entry fishery. We had meetings in public meetings in Oregon. We had Oregon staff as attendants in all of our meetings. Numerous concerns and questions were identified. Of course, they were nervous about what was going on, needing to understand. Part of the deal was to try and solicit information and get a discussion with the industry as a whole, so we tried to include other groups within this, including the commercial advisory group, fish buyers, active gill netters, seiners, suppliers, and interested public. Part of the public process, September, the Emerging Fishery Board was selected. These are all 2013, of course, except for the last one. In October, they had their first meeting in Vancouver. In October, we met with the Columbia River Commercial Advisory Group in Kathlamet. In November, we had the second meeting of the Emerging Fishery Advisory Board. That was in Rainier. In December, the Columbia River Recreational Advisory Group met in Rainier. We had a December meeting with Salmon for All in Astoria, and also in December at an Oregon public meeting in Astoria. And in January, Columbia River Recreational Advisory Committee meeting again. Commercial advisory meeting in Rainier. Yeah, guys up here correcting me, keeping me straight. So you can see we've had quite a few meetings, phone calls, a lot of work with the industry to try and develop some ideas and get their input on this. Part of their questions and concerns: who gets to participate, and how will participants be selected, and how are we going to share the harvest between the seine and traditional gillnet fisheries? When and where are these fisheries going to occur? And what are gear and vehicle regulations? And how will recommendations be made? How will the recommendations made today affect the future seasons? And what number of permits will be issued? How many fish will be available for seines? And can a seine fisher still gillnet in 2014? What beaches can be fished? Will zone catch limits be imposed? Will beach and purse seines be permitted? We had lots of ideas about this issues, and one, you know, the different ideas was for limited entry was open it to all fishers with a Columbia River permit. And then to limit it down a little bit, open it with qualifications such as minimum landing limits, so that you're just working with active fishermen or active licenses. Open it with a cap or individual fishing quota. Open it up by lottery. You can have an open lottery, or you can have a weighted lottery. They also talked about a competitive bid, where you put in a bid to get a license. The options that I think people felt the most comfortable with and liked the best was a limited entry for those who have a Columbia River commercial license and have had landings in recent years. And what that does is gives a fair opportunity for active fishermen. It enables active fishers with an interest to begin using the new gear, and it promotes participation. All the allocation and rules can be developed with the North of Falcon process that's already in place. IFQs can be considered if necessary through the Columbia River Compact and other regulations. The second option that was garnered the most interest, it was a lottery for all Columbia River gillnet license holders. Number of participants and permits allowed to participate would be based on the value of the harvestable fish available to the gear type. If more qualified permits, if there was more than needed for those fish, the director randomly selects through a lottery process. So once again, it could be weighted or just a straight lottery. And what this does is it helps ensure the fishery is not overcapitalized right off the bat. And fishers can anticipate a set amount of fish, and it lowers the economic risk. I guess right now I'd have to say that our favorite would be the first method. What it does is it gives everybody an opportunity to fish. It would... if we went with a lottery and somebody who was gearing up for it didn't win in the lottery, it kind of dashes their hopes on this fishery. So we're looking more of a limited entry, but more of an open style. And I think that it probably limited itself this first year as people sit back and watch to see what is going to happen. the 2014 implementation process. The director adopts qualifications as part of the emerging fishery permit process. SANE permit applications received by the director in the spring. It can be issued in the fall, in the summer, before the fall. Columbia River Compact sets fall seasons, including specific rules and regulations. And the 2015 process adjusted based on what is learned in 2014. And the rest of the year, the staff will continue to work with Oregon, with stakeholders, commercial advisory group, and work on developing this year's pilot SANE fishery in the fall. We'll work through the North of Falcon process with the guidance of the policy to figure out harvestable fish and associated ESA impacts that will be allocated to SANE, gillnet, and sport fisheries. And in-season adjustments can be made through the Columbia River Compact as needed. That's the end of the presentation. If anybody have questions?
Okay. Thank you. Questions? Commissioner Kehoe.
Yeah, thanks, Ron. A lot of moving parts here, obviously. And, you know, I asked you, you gave a presentation to the Fish Committee yesterday, and I had a question about what the department's thinking is in terms of, you know, the maximum number of these permits that you're going to issue. And I think your response said it's going to depend on what the harvestable run size looks like. And that's an important consideration?
Commissioner Kehoe, so as we go through the North of Falcon process this year, we'll get, the various run forecasts. In talking to Oregon, we're looking at the work group product that was used for guidance for the commission policy. There's a table in there that at least has an anticipated progression of the same fishery in terms of numbers of fish caught. Now, of course, those are just based on averages for run sizes, and they would have to be, I think, used as guidance, not absolutes. But we wanted to use that at least as a starting point to try and figure out, you know, what would be the best kind of best approach to having both a phased-in SANE fishery and an ongoing gillnet fishery at the same time. So in that table through 2015, it shows the vast majority of the fish would remain going to the gillnet fishery. Not that this is an absolute, but it's about 20% of the catch of Chinook was anticipated to go to the SANE fishery. So we were going to take that as guidance, and we won't know exactly what that would turn into in terms of fish until we go through the process and all the modeling and that kind of thing. But right now, we know that there are about 22 fishermen with either purse seine or beach seine gear based on contracts that we've had to experiment with the gear. I think in these first couple of years when we're looking at a smaller portion of the catch, and I'm just throwing this out there, so I don't know for sure, but you know, I think if we got beyond 30 or 40 fishermen, it would get probably difficult for individual fishermen to make money. One of the things that we've thought about is that looking at the bottom line, profit, as part of the target here, that we would want to fishermen that are permitted to participate in the SANE fishery would also be able to participate in the gillnet fishery as well. Therefore, at least in the first year, they've got an opportunity to if they say just break even in the seine fishery, opportunity to make some money in the gillnet fishery. And so we could alter days when those fisheries occur in order to allow people to do that.
Okay. I think that's an important consideration, I think, in terms of, you know, how you divvy these up. I mean, if you're willing to make a large number available, then it's going to be pretty much, if you want one, you can have one. And whether you fish it or not, that's completely up to you. Just because you have one of these permits, that doesn't mean you necessarily have to use it. I understand your approach, and I think it makes sense, is that you want to issue these permits to people that are going to gear up and go, and not to speculate. In my mind, I'm just trying to think of this. I think that's an important consideration. How many are you going to actually make available? And do you plan on engaging the advisory panel in helping you in come up with a number? Is that, or is your work done with the advisory panel?
Commissioner Kehoe, we would periodically continue to work with the advisory panel as we move through this, as we, I think, would also plan on giving updates to the commission as we're gonna continue to discover as we move along, particularly in this first year. So I think we need to continue to work with our advisors, not only on the how we qualify and permit fishermen the first year, but also detailed regulations in terms of, you know, length of the seine, soak time in a selective fishery, some other detail regulations that we'll have to develop or plan to develop. I think we want to use the North of Falcon process also to kind of work through those gear specs so that people that do want to order the gear know exactly what they should be ordering. We've heard from the supplier that they probably need to order by April in order to have it ready by August. So we're kind of looking at that as a key date to kind of further define what the specs of the gear will be.
Okay. Well, thanks. I'm very interested, obviously, in this and looking forward to getting future updates.
Commissioner Mankin, you look like you have a question.
Yeah, this is a question that's it's related to your presentation, and Ron, you can respond to it, or Guy, you can respond to it. And recently, I think myself and a couple of the other commission members have learned about an expansion of the exclusion zone in Young's Bay. And this is the chart that we have received right here. It looks to me like it's either two or three times the size of the existing exclusion zone. And this is a huge chunk of property to allocate over to exclusive zone. I understand the need to do at least some of that, but this is a huge chunk, and I'm wondering if the joint work group, did they agree to this?
Commissioner Mankin, the main thing that was discussed in the work group was exploring expansion of the select areas for the commercial fishery.
Mm-hmm.
This, I think, when we talk about barbless hooks as well, the exclusion zone, I don't recall specifically discussing that in the work group process. I do know that in Oregon, the Senate bill that was passed did instruct their commission to develop an exclusion zone in Young's Bay. In terms of the specifics of that exclusion zone, of course, that was left up to the staff and the commission. So that's what I think what you have in front of you is the staff proposal to the commission that they're entertaining today, in fact.
I think that there's been a lot of confusion about that zone. That zone is mapped out and laid out to keep the recreational fishery from fishing in that area and harvesting fish that are destined to that Young's Bay safe fishery, but it is not an area that is set aside for the commercial fishery to fish inside of. And I think the reason for that confusion is Oregon did some test fishing just on the outside of the 101, and they're looking at moving outside of 101, but not all the way out into the main channel and into the river. So they're just looking at a small extension of that commercial fishery, but not all the way into that full exclusion zone.
Director Anderson.
I do remember the discussion on this issue with the Columbia River work group when we were, I think we were in Seaside, was it? And I remember the Washington, several of the Washington commissioners questioning the proposal, and I also remember the degree of stridence on the part of the Oregon commissioners, given that it was within Oregon state waters and that they were felt that it was in part needed to fulfill the Governor Kitzhaber's direction to them about trying to keep the commercial fishery economically viable.
Well, I had just had a conversation with Ron before we came back into session, in which he explained to me that that within this exclusion zone, sport fisheries will be excluded. Commercial fisheries will not expand into that zone. There might be a slight expansion of the area in which commercials fish, but they won't be out in the main channel. And there was some, there was a lot of concern expressed about the potential for the commercial gillnet fleet to move out into the main stem because of the potential for that to be in direct conflict with our whole, the whole principle behind this reform, which is to move the gillnet fishery out of the main stem into the safe areas. So it appeared to many of us that this was contrary to the basic principles of the reform policy. But that has been clarified now that the commercials are not moving into the main stem.
So, Madam Chair, so I do know that ODFW is test fishing on the outer areas just beyond these particular off-channel sites, not just Young's Bay. But, yeah, Ron's correct that they're not test fishing out as far as this exclusion zone. It's more modest than that. But part of the policy or part of the direction was to explore if they could expand the area in those particular off-channel and still target the local stocks without intercepting upriver stocks.
Okay. Okay. Commissioner Mankin?
So what we're looking at here may not necessarily be true because it shows, at least out in the main channel there, inside of the island, that would be an exclusion zone.
So Commissioner Mankin, I think...
Is this not true?
That, but is that the proposal that the Oregon staff put in front of their commission?
I don't know. I'm asking you.
I think it is.
So that would be the exclusion zone where there would be no sport fishing.
That
doesn't equate to an expansion of the commercial fishery.
It does not equate.
Yeah, so that's just an exclusion zone for no fishing.
Okay.
So some of the other comments that we've heard about this exclusion zone have to do with the added safety risks of having small sport boats forced further into the main channel, away from the shoreline. Do you have any comments on that?
It's that exclusion zone is right there at Skipanon, where a lot of boats come out, and just above Hammond, where boats come out. So it's an easy access site. The main fishery on that is the first half of August. You usually have pretty good weather you fish in the mornings, avoid the wind, so you can fish downstream, you can fish upstream. It does, I guess if you have a real small boat and you come out of skipping on, you can keep tucked in there, but I don't see it as it's a small piece of buoy 10, a very small piece, and the time frame that everybody is looking at is the first part of August, because those fish come back the soonest. They tend to come back earlier than the Columbia River fish, and the fleet sets up there and fishes. And there's a lot of river traffic that the channel's right through there. You have ships coming in and out of the Columbia River. You have a lot of large fishing vessels coming in and out of the port of Astoria. So it's a busy area. It's just one of the areas to fish down there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we've heard quite a bit about this exclusion zone, and I have to say, it's a very difficult thing, as the director pointed out, for this commission representing Washington to push, we certainly don't control what the state of Oregon is demanding of its commission. They have to follow state law, so they're setting up this exclusion zone. It's there. It's very far over on their side of the river. I think we would have some sensitivities if Oregon were telling us what to do in the Cathlamet Channel. I don't know if they're similar situations, but I understand the sensitivities on both sides about whose interests are primarily affected. So it's a little awkward for us to be taking any strong measures, but we can identify the concerns that we might have about safety for sport fishers. We do have a number of our sport fishers who travel across the river to fish. It's a jointly managed river. So I think we just want to keep an eye on that and make sure that the sport fishers are treated fairly and it doesn't increase the safety risks in excluding them. If anyone else has anything else to say on the issue, okay. A little bit of a side topic, but connected with the Columbia River. Okay, this is an item that includes public input, and we do have someone who signed up. Heath Pikula, would like to come forward.
Thank you, Chair Wecker, Commissioners. A little kind of quiet here today. Not all of you here either. Kind of nice. I'll start on the topic you were just talking about. The exclusion zone was in SB 830. Our CCA Oregon folks went before the Oregon Commission today, and I believe they did adopt it on a 3-2 vote today, and I believe it's the staff recommendation. I'll have to figure that out. We put a number of alternatives in front of them, including, you know, really this, what, and this did come up in Seaside, as Director Anderson mentioned, and his recollection of the reaction of the Washington commissioners was pretty spot on. The idea behind this was, hey, we're making promises here on certain returns to the safe areas, so we want to make sure they get there. What we've continued to ask is how many of these select area brights are getting intercepted by in sport fisheries, and let's figure out how to compensate for those. And it could be as easy as increasing production in Young's Bay by that amount of fish to ensure the same amount of fish get back. And with the new fee in Oregon, there is money to do that. And so what we had really asked as the commission considered this decision in Oregon was, you know, when you adopt something like this, it has a way of sticking around forever and having a hard time getting undone. So let's make commitments now what the terms are for changing it. Let's get data on how many of these fish are getting intercepted. Let's figure out how much it would cost to create that production, because because the thing that I think these guys mentioned, those fish are the first ones to come back. So that early August buoy 10 fishery with the recreational fishery is very popular down there, and I think this area being closed off is probably going to hurt in early August. And it, you know, it doesn't have to be that way while still maintaining the promises to the commercial fishery. So now that I burnt time on that, I just wanted to come, and obviously this is a huge project, reforming and recasting these fisheries in the lower river. We've already talked about two of the things on the recreational side that were part of this comprehensive plan, three of them, barbless hooks. The hatchery transfers have gone through. I feel like I'm doing my review. I should just get a PowerPoint and I'll do a staff presentation with these. But then the Cathlamet Channel Safe Area, which we've talked about and has lots of love in certain quarters. I think, you know, to me, there's some overarching themes. It's the targets for harvest on the commercial side as part of this plan. Guy mentioned those. Table C4 is what it's called in the management strategies that you all worked on, which have actually targets for the gillnet fishery, for the main stem fisheries. And then the other overarching themes for our main stem commercial fisheries moving forward was conservation. I read there's a big projection of coho to come back this year. Well, the big idea behind these selective gear was to get at these excess hatchery fish before they hit the spawning grounds. And then the other, I think, factor that needs to be thought of in these commercial selective gear is the sports priority in the main stem, because you don't want to, you know, infringe on that if you don't have to meet those earlier two items. So I think there's a lot of questions really remaining on this, that and the staff presentation included a ton of questions, and there, quite frankly, weren't a lot of answers on a lot of those questions. And I'll try to sum it up here real quick. Is, you know, I think we would say in this beginning, less is probably better than more in terms of the number of permits. But more importantly is that how do we make sure we get to those to folks who actually want to participate in this fishery? And just having a random lottery, I think, poses a real problem, or door wide open, you know, anybody who had a certain level, because it's quite possible that folks who like to fish with a gillnet like to fish with a gillnet. So, and there's obviously safe areas for that. We're talking about Cathlamet Channel and so forth. And then finally, there's testing results that were done that showed how effective this gear was. Ed Wickersham testified to that a few months ago to you guys. And I think it really shows that this can be a very effective fishery with a low number of participants. So I guess our advice to you guys and the department as you move forward is this is a really important year, but you know, things like beach seines versus purse seines matter. If we can accomplish it via purse seines, it might make a lot more sense to do that versus beach seines, which is going to require beach closures on recreational fisheries that might not need to happen to catch those number of fish that were, you know, allocated, so to speak. So I appreciate you letting me run over my time. One last comment, which is, you know, I heard the comment like we're going to take care of this at North of Falcon. We have a little bit of a concern with that just because North of Falcon is incredibly hard for kind of what I call the public to participate in a real meaningful way in. So in as much as these kinds of conversations and decisions can happen in this venue right here in Friendly Tumwater or Olympia rather than in wherever you have to go for North of Falcon, that would really be appreciated.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. That closes this item.